teams win big trophies.
Yeah.
You'll get the odd individual who like Maradona did in 86.
Yeah.
It was his World Cup and he carried them, if you like. But he had a lot of good players around him as well.
Yeah.
Brad Valdano and people like that, and others. Luque back in 1978 and all that. So he also got good players. But invariably, it's all the team that come to the top at any level.
Mm.
You know, when in my playing days, Liverpool was the masses. They were a team, the team ethos, and everything took over, and they were the team ethos. Down the road, when I was there, and the one that won the lead in the European Cup, the team ethos.
Yeah.
That's why Roger Gaffer moved that people like Andy Gray and John Gidman on, because they didn't want to buy into the team ethos.
Yeah.
You know, so for example, he moved Kenny Swain back to right back. Saw something in Kenny. We've got to right back as a striker. A wide play. You know, so there's a lot of that goes on.
Yeah.
You know. The old saying, from the team come the stars. You know, you go together.
Yeah.
You know, you work on the unit combination.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the early.
Well, they come all recent as well. That Spine team, just unreal, wasn't they? There's no one stand out. You'd probably pick out to be like, he was brilliant, like when they were playing.
Well, I mean, even you go back to the Spain team of what won it in 2010 with Iniesta and
Xavi
and the other lad, I forget his name now. The five, the defensive midfield player.
Busquets.
Yeah. But they're all the unit.
Mm.
They're all the unit.
You've like that, done that.
Synergies. How difficult is it, or has it been traditionally, in the youth setup with England to kind of create that team, family, humility, when you've got the kids coming on the money that they're on from the teams that they're coming from?
The group I had, and I was blessed with a group, I had strikers of Harry Kane, Berahino, Benny Cafaldi, Nathan Redmond was in that group when we went to the Euros. I had a group of that. They were a problem. Because what you do, that quote I gave you earlier from the team come the stars, that was the method. That was the blueprint. So sometimes Harry played in midfield because Harry wasn't a striker of a young lad. Harry was a the 10 or a midfield player. Played Harry one game against Pogba because I knew Harry could run off Pogba and he scored a winning goal. You know, when we had this down the road here, George Thorne, yeah, West Brom, big midfield player. Him and Harry played together. And you had Berry, you know, and Aphobius for the strikers, you know. But it's just a case of how you can get them balanced. And
yes.
And then as a coach, you've got to sell that message to them. It's like I watched Stansfield out here. And I feel for him.
I feel for him because
he's such a talented boy that I don't think... For me, as a blue nose, he's going to get big number nine and play off him. Get a big number nine. It's not about...
Get the juke back out.
Let him play off him. Because his movement is fantastic.
It's so nice to hear,
you know,
someone of your professional standing say that, because we say that all the time, just as scumbag fans in the stands. But he came here as a goal scorer, and he's just not being given that opportunity now. He's all over the place. He's not... That season we had him on loan. He's over the shoulder. He's gone. Boom, instinct, shoot, goal. Wait, what have we got here? And then we've just taken him. I don't know what we've done.
A lot of things what I see going on in the game now, when I look at a lot of coaches now, it's about them, coaches' tactics and coaches this and coaches that and what. Thinking coaches this and coaches that, but if you take even Pep, bless him, you know, I think it's top draw. I think it's top draw. I saw his Barcelona team destroy Real Madrid one evening. Funny story. My wife bought two tickets for when to Barca, and she bought tickets to go Barcelona Real Madrid, and she got the tickets we landed in at there's two airports in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And she went in the furthest one away, but she didn't know because she wanted to keep the surprise from. So she didn't involve me in the conversation. And I think it's Girona, or whatever they call it, the furthest one away. They've got a team in the League of Two now, Segunda Two. I know, we had to get a taxi, got the train there, we got a taxi back the night after the game, and it was lashing it down and whatever. And she was a bit upset with us. I said, no, don't worry about it. The surprise was there, brilliant. And it was with Ronaldinho, Henri, and Eto'o. Mm. And we were up in the gods. And they pulverized Real Madrid. And all he did, Eto'o played as a nine. Ronaldinho played in between like a fullback, their fullback, Real full centre back and fullback, he played in between. And the other side, Henri did exactly the same. And Eto'o played like a deep nine. The so-called false nine, and then they just moved whatever they wanted, and he had the three Iniesta, Busquets, and Xavi, and then he had one of the fullback was Alves. I forget the left back, Pio,
Jordi Alba,
Pio, and
Pique,
and they just moved whatever they want, whatever suits, and there was always somebody in there.
Absolute defender's nightmare.
So you played with three strikers. But the three striker didn't stay up top. They play wherever they wanted, whenever they wanted the movement patterns. And that was it.
Absolutely dragging them all over the place. The defence didn't have it to go or stay or man mark or, yeah.
So the thing of saying, just let the good players play. It's a lot easier when that's the players, isn't it?
So when I say to you, we had a Phoebe, Berrino, and Harry Kane. There was also a Nathan Kinnan, but I played him up. Then what I already did from an international point of view, I sold them the badge. Sold them the badge playing for England. Your development is about this. Because what if the manager comes, another manager comes in and he wants to play split strikers? Basically, that's what we did. We had to do the hard work as well.
Did you ever have anyone come through that you couldn't sell to? Or was too hard to sell to, so you only came once? No. Everyone bought him?
No, because the badge was so important. And the ironic thing is, for me, in some respects, it was easy. Because that's how I worked as a youth coach within the club and other Stoke in the academy. I had Martin Patterson, who was just the manager at Notts County, and Adam Rooney, who came here.
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing. Ruse played more the central one. And we had that like Keith Thompson, from was a bit more of a Hampton lad. And he had a lot of ability, but he had a lot of issues, family issues, and he just couldn't get his head in the right space. And then when I left to go to England, other people didn't give him the empathy that I gave him. So he just drifted. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, that's all it is giving him the arm, showing him love, and showing that you believe in him. And it's amazing what you can get. You know, I always liked it to, I grew up in Jamaica and like we had, you know, the orange that used to be a keepy uppy, but it wasn't the actual orange itself. It was the gut, you know, when you had the juice out, the inside of the orange.
Yeah.
That was the thing we used to keep you uppy. We were barefooted then and whatever, you just keep you uppy. Well, it's when you get the orange and you squeeze it and you think that's the end of it. And then you go and squeeze it again. You can get some more out. And that's what we did. So we squeezed them. I mentioned Kenny earlier, Kenny Swain. Obviously, I played with Kenny at Villa and I played with Kenny at Portsmouth. And we still remain great mates to this day. And he's the best youth developer I've ever seen because he had an empathy with players and he showed you what, you know, if you, and he was a former teacher as well before, when he came out of the game for a bit, he was just going back to teaching and whatever. But he knew how to get the best out of people. And the key is always making them feel wanted. So we were together. We were like the under-15s, under-16s development coaches and selectors. So we'd go around and we'd sit in a hotel and we'd force enjoys as well. We'd throw all the recommendations on the floor. We'd just sit down and we'd go through and what you thought and boom, boom, boom. It's been hours and hours and then, and we knew who sort of like you pick two squads and right, he's ready for now, so he can play now, but he's not ready yet, but we know where he's gonna come and you bring him up later.
Mm-hmm.
So you allow the room for your late developers.
Yeah.
So for example, when you people see like Harry Winks, Harry's a little dot. Well, what a talent. I've looked at, although 2 days ago, I was looking at it, I've tied in my office and I came across a thing where it was Harry, Lewis Cook at Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Cookie.
Goodbye.
Goalkeeper who played for Liverpool this year, Freddie Woodman. They all made their England debuts. They're at Dele Alli in the same game. We were in what they call a Nordic tournament, all the Scandinavian nations, and we were in the Faroe Islands. And they played in again against the Faroe Islands and they were the debut, you know, because they weren't ready earlier for the, what we had a real big tournament at that age, one called Montague Tournament, which is a club tournament, running alongside a national team tournament with Argentina, Uruguay, Japan. You can get the different nations, various different times, you know, and so they'll go to that one. But these, not ready yet. Jesse Lingard came into that later as well. They're not ready yet, but they'll come later. So we know we're going to bring them in.
Yeah.
But you all allow room for your late developers rather than discard. You don't discard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the pronounce his name, Rio Ngoma, is it Ngoma? Yeah. Oh, he's not even in the 55, is he? But he's got man of the match for the game Saturday night.
Because what it is, that when they're both been thinking, right, he's one for the future, but while the three Arsenal boys are not here yet, let's bring him in. Them getting trained with it. They've got the lad from Bournemouth, Scott, he's there as well. And the lad, forget them, the Arsenal lad, he's there as well. About three or four of them were there. Hoddle did it with Ferdinand in France. So bring him in, let them train with us. Forget the injuries, they'll play. He's already been a star for the 1960s, 1990s, whatever. So you know where they are. You know the development program, you know what the system is like.
Yeah, I was going to say, so it's not a surprise to anyone involved. Like, because obviously as casual fans, we're not Liverpool fans.
Mm.
We see him and allegedly Slot was, he's half got the bullet because the fans are on his back, so he wasn't playing anymore there as well, isn't he? But yeah, so, but within the setup, he's been known since he was...
Well, it's one of them, is why do you ever use the development programme? Why do you have one? And I have to ask, maybe because I've come through development sort of programme as a coach, although I went to the management first, back in the youth development. But I look at a lot of clubs and I'm thinking, why the hell do you spend so much money on an academy and yet you don't utilise the players?
Well, that's the question for here at the moment, isn't it?
You utilise the players when he suits you because you've got nothing, all the injuries and the windows are shut. Then you can bring him, you've got no choice but to bring him in. But when the windows open, guess what you do? You go and buy players. You go, why do you run one?
Do you think that is that just because of the instant success that's required in football now? There's a very little room for manoeuvre to give these kids time in the first time.
There's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of that. But the game's got no patience anymore, in my opinion, in a lot of areas. Again, I go back to Man City and Pep. And what you look at O'Reilly, look at Foden. Yeah? Doyle to a degree, McAteer. He brought him through. Palmer, he gave him games. And he said, you played. I know you've got ability, but the players, they're a little bit impatient. And we're all out of the players. You want to play. When I was at Villa and I went along to Shrewsbury for 2 months and I came back, I knew I'd ready for the first team. Because the game that I was playing the big club show for Wednesday, Leicester, Vince Lineker and Alan Young and people like that. I knew I was ready. You know, Dixie and Keith Burchin at Norwich. They were the game that I was playing in. So I knew I was ready. Mandeby against George Riley, big George Riley, you know, at Cambridge. So I knew in my head I was ready, but I didn't go and ask for a move because you beat back then. You didn't. You know what I mean? You
got nothing.
You did, you know. When back though, in those days, it was.
But now they'll send their agents in, but now the kids won't even be involved with
them. Those days, it was when the manager said jump, you said, oh, hi.
Mm.
You know? And the senior pros wouldn't have it anyway.
Yeah.
Because that's the hierarchy. But I was blessed really at Villa because we had the likes of Tommy Craig and Alex Goblin, bless him, just passed away the other week, Crops. You know, the lads, if you weren't in the first year at Villa, you were in the reserves. And example is, I made my debut in the Sentinel Central League. At Phillip Argan's Preston in front of 10,000. The likes of Andy Graham Brown, it'll come back from injury, and one of them, and Frank Carrollis and people like that were played in here as well. But that's the testament to what it was like. If you're not in the first team, you better be in the reserves. And if you're not in the reserves, and you're a pro, why at the club?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was a big competition.
That's place. The argument now for under-21s, isn't it? What's the point?
21s for me is just, there's a few clubs who I think do it really well. The likes of Everton and Blackburn. Liverpool, they do it well. United do it well, Man U. There's a lot of clubs, Villa, to be fair, and they do it really well. Because they're producing players for the first team, ready for the first team.
It's a brilliant model, don't they? Where these players then are going for some 15, 20, 23 million to move on, and that money stays in the club then, doesn't it?
When they go in, they're going in ready. Yeah. If they move, we've got to sell them on because they cover the numbers and the quality, you can't get in.
Yeah.
You know, but I just see a lot of it, a lot of the sort of 21s game, although I don't watch them anymore. I haven't watched them for the last sort of 4 or 5 years consistently like I used to. Because I used to do it when I was in the agency for a while. I used to do it, whatever. And it was just an extension of the under-18s league. That's what I saw.
Yeah.
That's what I saw.
Do you think, it's just come to me, but do you think Jude was fortunate enough that we were in a bit of a pickle down here, that he was thrown on, that if we wasn't and we was doing quite well, he may not, so going back to the whole youth opportunity, I feel like sliding doors, if we were doing quite well, or we was had some money in the bank, we may not have thrown him on against Stoke or whatever it was, that because we've had Harley in and he was surprised that he was, but I feel like, again, you've just touched upon something there, that it was a little bit in the shit and like, let's try him. He's done well in training.
Timing,
obviously, from then, obviously, just phenomenal.
Timing is everything. Timing is everything. And sometimes it's in the right spot at the right time and circumstance, the situation. And possibly, you'll never know, or possibly, because historically that's what's been shown. You know, when you go back to when Nathan Redders, when he came through, Jordan Mutcher, when they came through, we needed players. Yeah. You know, Big Jack, Jack Butler, needed players. All those I mentioned there, they all played in England. Yeah, but they came through at a time when there's nowhere else to go. So they've got to turn to them. I'll give you a really good example before I come up to the Jude thing. We had Frank Newbull. Big Frank, he was at Chelsea and he played at, he went along, West Ham signed him. And I always remember this because he was in around our group, it was a 92 Frank, and we took him to France when they got to the semi-finals and they were there, like I said, and people like that, when they knocked us out of the final, we got to the semis. He was playing at West Ham. The window was shut, like the example I gave earlier. The window was closed, so he was playing and doing quite well in the first team. You know, the window opened. What did they do? They went and bought Benny McCarthy.
Yeah.
Bought Benny McCarthy. With no residual value.
I was going to say, he was at the twilight of his career then.
No residual value. Frank was an up-and-coming young player. And then he didn't go on with that sort of conviction. But yeah, he was playing and he was a good player. And again, he was one of those, a lot of the big number nine, we would play in the split striker's role sort of thing because we didn't want to be... I felt that at times we became a little bit snobbish where we didn't want to play, we didn't want to be seen to be playing a big number nine with England. That was from the hierarchy. We didn't want to seem to be playing a big number nine. So, hence the reason when I spoke about playing split strikers and deep nine and Harry and people like that, and Robert Hall and lads like that, let them rotate. So you had to then think on your feet. I remember speaking to Trevor Brooking out in Egypt in the under-20s World Cup. And I said to him, he told me I was going to be taking the 19s over where I've previously been assistant. And I said to him, what is it you want from me? What's my clarity? I want the clarity for my roles. And he said, Ray Clements, blessing with my line manager. And so Trevor was the technical director.
Yeah.
And he said to me that as a midfield player, when I looked up, when he picked his head up and looked up, he wanted to see two strikers rather than this one striker everybody plays with now. How are you going to score goals?
Oh, I'd love to hear that, Daniel.
How are you going to score
goals? Just football in general, yeah, that you look up and see two strikers.
So I explained to him, well, I just explained to you a moment ago about playing with a split striker. So I've got three till five. But obviously we wanted to play through the thirds and that was all part of, that was in it anyway.
But that was fed through the actual organisation that there was not to be a target man.
So. No, it wasn't fed through. But within the playing system, you felt it,
yeah,
because
it's unfashionable.
Yeah, and a lot of people frowned up in it because we as a nation, we are always deemed to be big and physical and set plays and this and all that. So when you have a big lad, no matter how good he is, he's frowned upon.
Yeah, like the whole, oh, he's not bad with his feet for a big lad. Why would he not be just because he's tall?
Yeah, in some places. And a lot of it, for me, a lot of it is the Dutch. That's one of the reasons why I think, if you look historically, although Pep was a disciple of the Dutch with Rinus Michels and Cruyff, which then took that influence to Barca, then came Pep through and Pep played it with Cruyff and now. The thing was, if you look at Dutch coaches in England who come to England, very few, if any, have succeeded long term. Yeah. And this is my view, my own personal view. Look at Arne Slot mentioned this season that Liverpool, which surprised me, because obviously the work I do, I see him quite a bit. He said they couldn't defend set plays, and team outran them. And team, there were two teams that I competed on, and they couldn't defend set plays. Whenever you played the youth international, whenever we played the Dutch, if they beat you, they would tell everybody how great they were. They could sell oil and sand to the Arabs in the same breath. Tons times over. A million times over. But whenever you beat them, whenever England beat them, or whatever, oh, we were too physical. We were playing relied on set plays. And that's all they ever talk about. Whenever you're not allowed to beat them.
It's funny that, because I remember many set plays in that 4-1 at Euro 96. Well, a lot of open play goals there, weren't there?
So, but that's, and that was a terrific performance. But that's their mentality, you see, because they are far superior to everybody else, technically. Yeah. And a lot of people, and a lot of our media, in my opinion, in the coaching world, they went down that route. And so a lot of the good stuff was going on in England was negative because other people were saying so. So what other people outside said was good. No matter what we were doing was wrong.
Yeah.
But if someone outside says what we were doing is great, then also what we're doing is great.
Mm.
So that was part of the answer to why we don't play as big strikers.
Do you find it ironic now in coaching that long balls, set pieces, all of a sudden the king, Arsenal have won the league based off set pieces, direct football?
I wouldn't say it's direct football, far from it. What I see with that is that they play the longer pass at the appropriate time. So, for example, in my career, within my time, with the likes of Graham Souness and Glenn Hoddle and people like that, Gordon Cairns, the one, Don Masson, great passes of that longer ball when he was on. Van Dijk played more longer pass than anybody else. Not a long ball, a good switch play.
Well, this was always Allardyce's argument, wasn't it? When people used to hit him with that hammer and say, it's not a long ball, it's a ball into an area.
At the right time, right place. So Glenn Hoddle's a bad player in a lot of people's eyes. No, he wasn't. He was a fantastic player. He was a fantastic
player. Well, we were talking the other day about the Swindon game down here when he pushed himself forward into midfield.
Rather than back through, yeah.
Absolutely destroyed us.
Mm. You know, and... But it's a lot of conjecture and a lot of people's opinion. That's the game.
Yeah.
And it always will be. But I just see, going back to the Arsenal question, I just see with Arsenal, Arsenal play for me what I call a mixed game styles. And I liken it to The Art of War. What do I mean by that? I don't know if you've ever read that book, The Art of War. It's a fantastic read. And I link it to football. Why do I link it to football and how? Well, if a team defends deep, the space is going to be in front of you. So there's no space in the back. So you got to play field. And if you defend compact, then the space is on the outside. So think of war. Use the airspace with an 80. You go underneath with the submarine to get at them. And when they're back off, then you send your foot soldiers through and then you play through the thirds. That's the combination of how I think and utilize it in that way. You know, so it's recognizing where the space is, when I can pick somebody off and so on and so forth. I also, if I put a cross in the box, I've got more chance of scoring a goal than if I don't.
Yeah. Because on that as well, like we've talked before about, as though it's a revolutionary thing what they're doing, the set-piece coach gets a lot of credit. But every goal that I've seen that Gabriel scores from the corners, they're just whipping it. And in curling ball to the back post, and he's there, he's free, which obviously is a testament to his movement. Mm-hmm. But it's not, they're not doing anything convoluted or particularly complicated with it, are they? It just seems like no one's picking him up properly.
No one's picking him properly because people don't mark people anymore. They don't pick people up anymore. Yeah, people don't pick people anymore.
Zonal.
Yeah. Zonal marking is fantastic. But the problem with zonal marking, in my opinion, people don't do zonal marking properly. They don't know how to do zonal marking properly. Zonal marking is not, the word zonal is not, it's not zonal. It's only a starting position. If I was marking this cup here, and cross is coming in on goal side, if I was marking that, I'd be two, what we call two jobs. The ball's coming from there, the goal's here, so I'm goal side, and I want him outside of me, and I'm goal side. So I'm doing look at the ball, and I've got him, I'm doing two jobs, him and me. I've got him, and I've got the ball. Two jobs. Not this nonsense where he's there, and I've got my back to him, and I'm thinking, I can't see the ball. I've got to be able to see the man and ball. As you would in free play, man and ball. So I can deal with the ball. If he's come, I can deal with it. If he's pulling away from it, I can. As soon as he's pulled, I pull. I pull because I know he wants that space, but I pull, but I pull closer to that space than to him. And it's just the basic principle of defending.
So what's being coached then when they both end up on the floor in a bear hug?
Cultural.
They need to start booking people for that, don't they?
It's cultural. Because what it is, a lot of it is where, from a cultural aspect, you get away with things in different nations and what have you. And then obviously the game has become more, what's what I'm looking for? More cosmopolitan. So you've got different influences and so on and so forth. And they all moan about it, or every manager in the country moan about it. I laugh when they moan about it because they're all doing it. They're all doing it.
Yeah.
Mark properly, and you give yourself a chance to deal with the ball and what have you. But part of the reason is because I think they started because when the rules changed slightly about the offsides, and they all got scared of it or whatever. But you know what? It's, for me, it's very simple. Crosses coming and get first contact, head the ball away.
Yeah.
If you head the ball away, you're comfortable. If you get there with your foot first and can clear it, or better still, get out there, stop the cross coming.
And it all full dates back. I think it all dates back as well that we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. No. There's a lot of information now, isn't there? Where back in your day and the 90s that we particularly watched and stuff like that, it was just that, wasn't it? Get to the ball first, win the ball, then regroup and you're out and first stage is out. And now there's a lot of words for stuff that's been done historically. Well,
when we were younger, the number one rule was do not play the ball across your box.
Yeah.
Now the number one rule is play the ball across your box, isn't it?
And a lot of the goals come from that, didn't they?
A lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
A lot of
setting the trap, they call it now, don't they? Well, so you're setting the trap on yourself half the time.
Well, back in the keeper did that. you know, you have your trigger point when you want to go and press.
Mm-hmm.
You did it. Or you dropped off. You think, okay, then my play, boom, 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 drop off a little bit and hold the line here and whatever. It's just, I've got a fear that too many academics are in the game and got involved in the game. And there's research about this and research about that and this and that and this and that. And whatever. And then end of the day, the fundamental problem of the game is still the game. You can shape it up like Barca did and Pep did or whatever. And you can shape it up like Mourinho did. You can shape it up like Keegan did at Newcastle. What an expansive team that was. You can shape it up like Freddie Goodwin did down in the 70s. Even maybe before your guys' time, but that's a team I watch. It was fantastic with the front three.
So when I watched the 66 game on Saturday on Channel 4, wasn't it?
Watch it again, yeah.
Tell you what, ball was a menace, weren't it? But yeah, even watching the way England played, and you're going back, what's that, 50 years now? So the game, like you say, the game hasn't changed, has it? You had overlaps, you had traps, you had them coming short to bring the attackers on to then go over the top.
Mm-hmm. So that's what they go back to out of war. Mm-hmm. I even saw Jack Charlton, which I didn't see. Jack Charlton went down the left wing, made an overlapping run down the left wing, and crossed the ball with his left foot. You know what I'm thinking? So that's your sort of inverted centre back.
Yeah.
You know, or your full backs with Wilt Wilson and Coy. I'm just thinking about it. You know, the game hasn't really changed.
No, but you've got coaches now that talk about it like they just invented what they're doing. And you watch that and you go, yeah, this has been since Die Dot. People played this one.
It's that repackaging it, isn't it?
Yeah. It was a 3D get though, wasn't he, Jack? The amount of shots he had from the edge where he could have had a little look up and...
Yeah.
But as it was going into extra time, they looked absolutely shattered.
But going back to your question about Jude... Jude is always going to come through. When you're an outstanding talent, only one thing can stop you, and that's you. There's a lot of talented boys that they get a little bit of taste of it, and then they get carried away with it. But what he did for me, he got to a level and he's thinking, right, this is me now, and I'm going on again. It's a bit like, for a look at it, he'll give you a cricketing equivalent. When Harry Brooke got into the England setup, he just said, this is my stage, in my opinion. That's, you know, I love the Test cricket. And I don't mind the white ball cricket, but I'm a Test cricketer. I love the Test cricket. And he just said, this is my stage. Now I'm going to take it on. In fact, Joe Root just scores on just for fun because he knows he's capable.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't do that, he's underachieving. And then you look at Jude, for me, if he's not delivering what he's capable of, he's underachieving. But he's always got a level.
Yeah.
And his levels are good. You know, his levels are always good. And that's where I think it is. Yes, circumstances probably forced their hands a little bit to play him.
But as soon as he stepped on this pitch and done that, then he was like, everyone, he obviously knew, didn't he? But everyone then was like, why? And then but you see him for England now and you see him, club football. If he's not in the game, he'll make himself in the game, won't he? Whether it's
do something.
He's a little bit naughty as well, isn't he? Where he'll go in and kind of like reverting back to the old school when we spoke to ex-players and stuff. That challenge, it's not that challenge anymore, is it? But it might be a little dig and a little, okay, then everyone's kind of what? And he'll get himself into the game.
He knows how, and it's a clever footballer, he knows how to sort of upset the apple cart. He knows how to get on the people's skates.
The game goes.
He knows how to lift his colleagues, you know? And it's a skill in itself. People call it dark arts, but it's a skill in itself.
Yeah.
Have you watched any of that Dear England?
No.
I just saw a clip of it, and it's a clip of the actor playing Jude and the actor playing Southgate, and it's, I don't know where they've kind of scripted it from, whether it's just a reimagining of what, you know, using poetic license, but between Jude's character and Grealish. Like the done us dirty.
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
It's not great. But I saw your interview with Blues where you were saying 2021 squad, there were 16 players from your actual development through England in that team.
2021, that's the World Cup Russia.
No, the it's the Euros, and it was the
Euros.
The postponed Euros.
Yeah, it was a combination of the Russia 2021, Russia, the World Cup in Russia 2018. There was 16, 17 lads that I worked with all the way through the development groups, and very similar to the Euros as well. Because in that, Connor Cody came into that group. Connor wasn't involved in the World Cup 2018. He came in. But because how it works, because I was, as I said, mentioned before with Kenny with the development group, Ken Twain, of the Kenny's assistant at 16s, 15, 16s. We did have 15s side, but you know, on the 16s coming into the 15th and so on, some were 14th. We would pick sometimes a year, 2 years young, like Marcus Rashford, Trent. We'd pick up a year young and so on and so forth. And then I was then assisting Kenny with the, not remember I mentioned that group with Dele Alli and Harry Winks. On the 17s, backup, not backup, but coming up group, supported the top end ones, if you like. These are the late developers. And sometimes these ones don't go on. They're physically ready, but they're not ready to go again long term.
Yeah.
But waiting for the later developers. So there's a lot of lads came through. And then for Mayor, I was working with Brian Eastick, who used to be at Blues back in there, Brian. Brian was the 18s head coach and 19s head coach, and I was working with him as assistant. So I'm seeing the likes of, if you miss on the 16s, I'll get him the 17s. If I miss on the 17s, I'm going to get him 18s and 19s. And to the likes of Kyle Walker and Kieran Trippier when they came in later. Walks came in at under 19s, Kieran came in under 18s, and so on as from Cena. You know? And then when I became 19s coach, people like Stonesy and all them, they're coming through and what have you. And then, so the ones I saw 16, I don't see them again until 19th. So yeah, that's where Connor Cody is an interesting one. We saw him at, didn't come to the development camp. Well, we had him, I went to watch him at Compton Park, Wolves training ground, playing for Liverpool. He was playing at right side, centre back, but always a leader, always a leader. And obviously, played for Kenford, when we won it under 17s, he was the captain, a really good squad. But then when I became on the 19s coach, the 92, I mentioned Frank Newble, Nathan Delfonso was at Villa and that, lad like that, Stephen Colker. Called for the late developer, and he came through and whatever, took him to the finals, semi-finals in France. We didn't make the actual final, we lost to the French in the semis. They had a bit of Lacazette and all that, playing for them, you know, and all that, and then we fall in a bit. But then the decision I made alongside Ray Clemens, bless him, was that our 93 group, which is a really good group, with one under 17s, Cody's captain, Larry Kane, that group, the side door, Bennick and all that, decided to put my neck on the line and say, okay, these are 93s. So we're in the qualifiers with the league round. Here we go. We had Switzerland, who had Xhaka winning and everything, Alaco Rodriguez, who was at Wolfsburg and all that. They were world champions at under 17s.
Okay.
Switzerland, under 17s, were the world champions. And then in the group we had, so there was, you have a qualifying round and you have an elite round. So this is now the elite round and only one goes through.
Right.
So the elite group, four teams, there's England, Spain, with Alagaba, Morata, Maraca, all out, you know, really good group. Their manager was Le Pettigrew and Montenegro. So we beat Montenegro 1-0, Harry scored. But what I did, going back, I looked at it with Clem and I said to him, I think we need to push the 93s up. He said, you're taking a risk, you know. I said, no. My remit was to help produce players for the seniors and the 21s. if we can win a trophy, great. We all want to win. We all want to win. But I just said to myself, I'm going to give my extra year. And if it happened again, I'll do it again. We didn't qualify. We missed out on goal difference. My two keepers were Jack Butler and Sam Johnson. Two Premier League keepers, two players played for the full side. Jack Robinson, who played out here. Robbo was one of my boys.
Okay.
Yeah. Jamal Lascelles, Andrea Wisdom, who played at Derby.
Yeah.
Connor Cody, Eric Dyer, Michael Keane. Yeah. Harry, Saido, and so on and so forth. So we had a good group, so why hold them back? And we felt the best 92s, that Jack Wilshere, people like that, had already gone up to the senior squad. Jack Rodwell had already gone up. I played for the seniors. So we didn't think the group coming up, 92s, were really going to be good enough for the other 14s. So I went with 14 younger ones. Alex Hassler-James, another one. Went with 14. Bulk of those played for the seniors of the 21s. So although we didn't win a tournament,
the bigger picture.
But you've done your job.
I'm in youth development. Mm. I'm in youth development.
In youth, winning every tournament.
That's what Darren Purse was saying, wasn't it? About the Cardiff development team again. Yeah. Thing, yeah. He had half a dozen of them in the first team last year.
I played for Wales first team as well. The Twins, Colwood boys. Yeah, I know pretty well. And you know, so that's my that's all been my thing in terms of course we want to win, and of course they want to win. You know, we lost in that group. The following year, we lost to the finals, and we lost to Greece in the semi-finals. You know, sort of thing. And things happened that lost in the semi-finals because things went on outside of the camp that I had no control over, which is because there's still some potential judicial stuff I've got to hold that.
Oh, wrong.
Not judicial in terms of what, but in terms of obviously I left the FA and one thing or another, but in terms of clause of contacting players about this and about that and whatnot. And I just felt it wasn't right to play the players for when I put in certain players into the games.
Right.
I'm looking, think about the players more. So I help my council. And look after your players and stuff. Say what was right for players. And part of being a coach, and part of being a parent, a guardian, is the players' well-being. And I put the players' well-being first, more than the bit about going and getting the sort of going from a semi-final to a final.
Yeah. Did you get a lot of that? And did you get a lot of club interference when you're at tournaments with the kids?
Okay, you'd get it sometimes. You get it from time to time, and that particular tournament was particularly not right.
Wrong.
I mean, we had situations back then where we, you know, how it used to work was if you qualified on the 19s for the it's a 1 year group in under 17, like I mentioned, Switzerland won it in 19 or whatever it was. They own the 17 group, which is a 90. I think all back with the 1990 world. No. Basically, what it is, if you're in the European final, if you're in the World Cup, you win the Euros 1 year under 17s. You don't have a World Cup under 18s. So you want to have a World Cup under you win the Euros under 17s. You might get a Euro under 17s. But you won't get a World Cup at under 20 that year group because it's in a year group band.
Yeah.
Right, that makes sense. So, for example, Danny Welber played in the World Cup in China with John Peacock and group under 17 and Jason Steele and people like that. So they didn't have a World Cup under 90. So they had one under 17. Danny Langebill, and I was part of that group, so they didn't get one under 17. So that's how it worked, 3 years, 2 year cycle. So the 93 group won the under 17s. Didn't have a World Cup at under 17s, but then a World Cup at under 19, under 20, sorry. No, I say whenever I'm 20s. So that was it. So my group who qualified in, got to the semi-final degree against Greece. They then they qualified one of the top four. So we're in the semis, so we automatically qualify for the World Cup. Okay. So they then got to the World Cup in Turkey and Brian took that group. And like, half the time you get half of the groups, half, you don't, you know, you need to see at the place because it was during the pre-season for the clubs.
So, obviously.
Yeah. And then that was scheduling. Remember when we did that, we got to Colombia. The 92 group and Reece Brown from Man United and Corker and all, a lot of lads didn't go because the club wouldn't release them. And that's how it was. We had no control over scheduling. Where the Spanish and all of them, they're taking all the big players. Half the time we couldn't get our big players. Half of the time we could not get our big players for tournaments, which people didn't realise.
Why?
Sort of thing. You know, I remember when we mentioned that injured thing I did with the group in 92s, something like the year group with Matty James and all them, Colker, or no, it's 92s. When we got to the semi final in France, we took them to Normandy on the beaches and all that. And before we took them down, we showed them, what's that film? Tom Hanks.
Saving Private Ryan.
We showed him the film before we took him down. And honestly, you could hear a pin drop. It was that. And we took him into the media. They were in Capello, Tom, after South Africa and whatnot. And the media, you know, follow me and then following us around and whatnot to see why, you know, what we do and how we do it. And I'll be bringing it to the lads through. And it's really good from that point of view.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, so it's just interesting, different way of doing things.
It's nice, isn't it, to give them a bit of culture.
Yeah, yeah. Well, where to the other group, Kenny always would take them. If we went to Northern Ireland on the 16th, took them to Stormont. We went to Lincoln with a 93 group. We took them to the Lincoln Cathedral. Just something, to break it up and for them to see. Yeah. You know,
take them out of the parts and just
sort of things and that, yeah.
So we're kind of in the reverse.
Yeah. Let's go back to.
So before you were a coach, you were a footballer. So yeah, he said, growing up in Jamaica originally, coming over. So I see you moved to Sparkbrook.
Sparkbrook, yeah. My grand used to. Torn from Nans and what, my mum used to live in Grantham Road and then moved to Warwick Road, Spark Hill. You know the Mermaid?
Yeah.
Right, this is the Mermaid. There's two flats there, right by the car park. The Mermaid car park, big car park, we were the road facing this way. We were the two flats up there. One of them, yeah. So my nan used to live in Dollarwood Road. Farm Park, Cross Farm Park's there, and man lived there. So I every Sunday used to go over the big guys, my uncle and all, and play 50 or so, 40 or so, whatever it was, that's how it was back then, and get smashed. get smashed all over the place and what have you. And then I went to Conway Road Junior School. And that's when I first met Hoppy of York, King bless him. So when I first met him, he was at Rakey Lane, played against Easterden Junior School. And after junior school, I went to Golden Ellick. I used to walk from then Warwick Road up, pop fast past the BSA fields, our school playing fields.
Okay.
And I walked down a Cove Road and then come here for the games, you know, but that's what they used to do. And you should get chased, especially when the Manx were in town. If you get chased out of there, we would have the Bother Boots and the Doc Martens back in the day and all that, you know, and that's what it was like, you know, some of my pals. Funny, I saw one of my friends season before, a lad called Lawrence Goodman. He'd moved to Wales, but we used to go to school together, Golden Ellick and Conway, whatever, and him. Soon as we got back on the phone, told him on the phone to another good friend of ours, a lad called Anthony Stokes, who actually got me playing Sunday League football for a team from Woolstock, boys team called Gordonians. We used to wear the Fiorentina kit, purple shirts, white shorts and yellow socks. You know, so it's one of them. Well, then in the third year, Mum moved out, so we moved over to Stetchford, where she still is now, in Audley Road. Then I went to Alderley Boys School in Shard End, which was really good. It was the best thing that happened to me, moving across. And obviously a lot of my mates from this side, but moving across the school, you know, the PE teacher, Mr. McDermott, I couldn't wish for any better in terms of the sporting teacher. The same lads did everything. We won the Blues Cup. Let's go back. We lost the Trevor Gill Trophy at Villa Park against Hampstead Hall, which is the first time it's been played at Villa Park. We lost that final. But I froze. I just couldn't kick a ball that day. I just absolutely froze that day. And we lost. And then the following year, we won the Villa Cup. So this is our fourth year. Trevor Gill was third year. Fourth year, we were in the Villa Cup. And we won that at Bodyball. We didn't play the Villa Park. No, we played the Villa Park. We didn't play for Sunderby. We played at played one small school. Frankie Bond. I know Frankie played for Oldham and all that. So we lost that game. We won that game at Bodymore Reef. And then in the fifth year, we got to the Blues Cup final. And that was played at the old training ground, Damson Lane, against Pitt Basson, which is up his school team.
Yeah.
And we smashed them. We smashed him with that. But I was playing a lot of Sunday football. Because of the Gordonians and Bentley Rovers and having trials here and everywhere. But at the time, I then played for a team called Wilhelmina Boys. Larry Canning, bless him, he used to be the... he used to work for Radio 2, BBC Sports Radio 2, Larry Canning. And his son Andy went to my school. Andy was a good local footballer again. And Larry took me, caught the trials of Coventry and the Walsall, or what have you, the striker and whatnot. And then, like I mentioned before, Jim Alton mentioned a while, but we're tackling back or whatever, come a centre-half and whatnot. And then in the adventure, I was scoring a lot of goals as a striker. Scoring a lot of goals. I think in 1 year, I got over 75 goals for coming back for school and some elite teams and everything. Yeah. And then I ended up going to Sutton Town, Sutton Coalfield. But I was there 14, 15 to play. And then in the Midland combination, second team in the main. Some really good pros. Kenning, who was a pro at Villa back in there, Compton Edwards and like that, Dave Reed. Some really good solid pros, non-league footballers, you know.
Yeah, cut your teeth.
Yeah, Kim Casey, who was 2 years older than me, went to Marshall School, but he was a good footballer, Kim. And he played a lot of goals for Kim in his areas, but he didn't want to go pro. He had a good job outside of the game or what have you, all this stuff. And then I went to sort of go for you, like I said, Sutton Town, and I was there for a while. But in the meantime, I was playing for Bentley Rovers on a Sunday, who was affiliated to Man City.
Okay.
And Bill Larkin, bless him, passed away a couple of years ago, Bill. His boy Glenn's a big blues nose, and he's come down to the games and what have you. And then he'd take us up to a main road to cheer him to their training ground, and they wanted to sign us or whatnot. Well, I was 10 of us when I wanted to go leave home and all that, what have you. Because I'd heard whispers that Villa would have wanted to take us and all that. But I wasn't sure. Then he had no agent, he just did things and whatever. But at the same time, I'd come here. I played in a cup final, schoolboy cup final for Wilhelmina FC. Wilhelmina used to play for boys team, and we were smashing everything in the Birmingham Boys League, even everything. Really good side, a lot of good lads. A lot of them went to trials but didn't kick on. Really good players. A lot of them from my old school team, older the boys. Like I said, we win everything, and then the boys from over Old Greenway playing with us for Wilhelmina and so on and so forth. Really good lads and a good team. But when I played in the cup final and we won at Highgate United, the legend that is Gentleman Joe Bradford, who played for the football club, he was scouting and he gave me the man of the match and got me the trial here. And I've still got the book at home to this day, the 1875 centenary book. with the coloured photos of it, Howard Kendall and one of the history, that team with the penguin and blue shorts. If you look it up, that team, I've got it all to this day signed. And I came in trial over in the, we actually lapped the track. It was me and Daniel Sturridge's dad, Michael. We were like lapping the track, and that was the trial. And then we went in the, under the D club, next to the D club, the old gym. And then I think the press use it now. Went in there, whacking the ball against the wall. That was the trial. That was my trial for Blues back in the day. Oh, there. So then I went.
A bit better than this.
Yeah. To be fair, I did play the game. Played in one game at Elmden. We met here. By the railway, as we used to call it.
Yeah.
Met here. And the old player eventually stayed next to it. And we then went to Elmden, and there must have been 60, 70 players in there. That's when I first met Ian and the South Obviously Soul. And I had 20 minutes, half an hour on the pitch.
It's going to sound quite hard to actually stand there and make yourself sick.
There's no point getting change, to be honest with you. When I look back on it, no point getting change. So little things like that I learned. So when I became an academy coach, from bringing a trialist in, I need 2 days with them, minimum.
Why?
I need 2 days with them, minimum.
Your literal lived experience, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I had Adam Rooney. Because Adam Rooney came to me as a trialist. I signed him at Stoke. Rooney. And I need to look at him. Because Eamon Dolan, who actually played here, Irish lad, I bless him, he was an academy coach at Reading, Barry, to I had to work with Eamon at Exeter. And then he said he's got these three, but he can only take two. He had Long, and he had Doyle, and he had Rooney.
One.
So he rang me, and he said, "Oh, look, I'll look at this lad, see where we'll look. So I'll look at Rooney's uncles." And then I went to the Dutch coach we had at that town, Johan Boskamp, and I said, "Yeah, from. I want to sign this lad." He said, "Oh, so where are you going to get money from?" I said, "Well, I've got no money. We had no money. We had nothing on Stoke. I had nothing." Eventually, remember Kevin Reeves, the old Man City centre-forward, Norwich and that, Bournemouth?
Yeah.
Reeves, he was a chief scout at the time. So I knew he just off your track. So Reeves called him, look up. He said, "You got to sign it." That's the one's clarity, so you got to sign it. So we get to say, "I'll fight it." So I think it was just like 10 grand to pay for him. Another Irish club and that. So he was good. And his last game for Stoke, he scored a hat-trick down at Brighton. Over the first team then. And he was with the first team, you know, Mike Patterson and whatnot. So going back with Man City, when they wanted to sign us, didn't happen. So I didn't with Bentley and whatever. So I was playing for Sutton Town, and then invited me for a couple of wanted me for the week. Played a game against the first team against the reserves. Like I was saying before, if you like the first team in the reserves, I would try this. I was in the reserves playing against the. That against Andy and the Green up and Brian and Dixie, they would have played their front three against up the back in the day. I remember a January day, and it was snow with this week, probably snow off the pitch at Bodymore on the pitches, the play and what have you, and proper kit, shirts on and all of you. Kept no training shorts on, but you had it, match shirts on, shin pads, everything proper done properly. Then after the game, the manager came over to me and said, I'm coming to see you tomorrow. Come to sign you. Being might have been not long being a centre half, you know.
Did you find being a centre half from being a centre forward is an advantage? Because you know, you're thinking like a centre forward's thinking. You know where they're trying to go.
I could sit here and say, yeah, back in it, that's what it is. But that wasn't the case.
No.
It was just a case of, I don't know. I've always had good spring. I've always worked hard on my jumping and what have you. I did everything. Before going to go back to the school team, we actually got the Docker Shield final at cricket at Edgbaston. So at that same school team, we did everything. We had lads who ran for the county, run for Erington and Saltley, played for the county, Erington and Saltley. So we had lads who did everything, you know, and virtually the same lads. One or two different ones here or there, but virtually the same lads. So we got the Docker Shield final, and the funny thing with the Docker Shield final was we were playing, I think it was Kings North and Grammar, someone like that, and a lad who's 50 over, who's an, or 20 over, coming through the 50, I think it might be 20. He was a 99, and the last ball before the overs had finished, I bowled him. I hit a bastard. And you know what? To this day, I've never forgotten that. And I didn't like that I bowled him. Because, you know, he'd have been in love for the kid to get a cinch. And this is not me being wise after the event or whatever. They were far superior to us. You know, we're a little boys' school from back for the Shardin or what have you and whatnot. I didn't even have any white pumps, as we used to call them back then. Not trainers, white pumps or cricket boots or anything like that. They've got all the whites and they wore. And Mr. Mack went up to the Fox and Goose and we got to pick the pair of white pumps up, Adidas white pumps up for me and stuff like that, you know.
You got this grammar school all in pristine lily.
That was it. But I've never forgotten it. You know, we lost the game. We were about 61 some man at the end and whatnot.
But you got to skip him on 99 if
possible. Yeah. But you know, but I love my cricket anyway. So it was great playing there. So going back to the sign at Villa, that was it. So you got
find it hard being Blues to sign for Villa, or was it just like a local thing? You were just, and then the opportunity was just like too big to.
No. I wanted to be a professional footballer. Yeah. And anyone that offered me to say that I wanted to sign me initially, I mean, I could have got a City and all that.
Yeah.
But I just, it didn't come into the equation. And I think the first time he came about that I was a Blue Nose when I was at Villa was when we were, I was in around the first team or what have you, and when we won the FA Youth Cup, Robert was the captain, Robbie Hopkins, who was captain. I'd be on a really good youth side. Likes of the goalkeeper, Mark Kendall, who actually played for Blues. He was England youth team keeper at the time with Paul Allen and Gary Short on Paul Allen and Steve McKenzie and when they won the Mini World Cup back then. Mark Jones, who played for Blues as well, played for Villa first and then played for Blues. Ray Walker, Mark Walters, Paul Birch, God rest his soul. Obviously, OP was the captain. You know, David Mailer went on to play a lot of games at Blackburn and Hull City. You know, when I think of the two lads out of the squad who didn't play league football on first night. You know, so that's what it was.
Fairly standard.
But it was tough at Villa. It was tough. It was hard. You had to. You were training against those pros every day. You know, you were training against the pros every day. One of the biggest lessons I learned, I played at Villa Park in the Central League against Blackburn. And they had a big centre forward called Norman Bell. He should be at Wolves. And I've jumped. And I put my hand up. And I've handled the ball. To this day, I'll never know why. Honestly, I'll never know why. And the penalty. I mean, people like Tommy Craig, Bill Scott's international from Newcastle, and he's in the team, the reserve team, or whatever. And I'm effing them blind directly. And he went, did you handle it? I went, yeah. He went, go over there and get ready because Spinks, he might as well Spinks and go, so he'll save it. So said, so done. We got away with a 1-1 draw. But that wasn't the half of it. The next bit was, for 13 weeks, I did not play a game, either for the reserves, other than the first team, obviously, but either for the reserves or the intermediate team, the under-18s, I didn't play. I was up and down the country with the skips and whatever, carrying the skips or whatever, and doing my work, still training everything. Because Ray Walker, who played for Port Vale, Captain Port Vale, a good player, Ray, who was a midfield player, Ray, at the time, but he could play centre-half. And I called Dean Glover, another Brummie, Dino. They got in. Because I got dropped. And I couldn't get a game. Anyway.
Why? And they're ruthless.
Whew. And what was the standards?
Who was the gaffer then?
Ron Saunders.
Was it Saunders?
And Bill Shorter, so the reserve team coach, who was also worked here, Bill.
Isn't it mad? Like, nowadays, like going back to like McLeish and Bruce and things crossing, it was that commonplace, wasn't it, that Villa and Blues players and coaches interchanged like through the 70s and 80s, that it wasn't even really an issue, was it?
It was an issue. But Bill Shorthouse was a centre-back, and he had played alongside Billy Wright for Wolves. And he used to tell the stories about this and what a learning, And he was the best in Aberhamton because he got me, he made me a centre half. He taught us how to be a defender.
Yeah.
He taught us. I remember him telling us a story once, he said he was playing against a guy called, I think it was Fred Pickering. It was definitely Pickering. I think it might be Fred Pickering. Who played for England as well. He said he was at Molyneux and whatever. And he was, when the ball got back and he was knocking back to the keeper and the crowd, and every time he played, but 4 or 5 times, and he said, the next time he tried, or next the time he happened again, he tried to turn a slip on his back. So he was gone. They said he was quick. He was like a pigeon. So Dean Glover, I remember Dean Glover saying, well, Billy Meats, he was like a pigeon. You've got to come catch him. But the moral of the story was, do the right things.
Don't get influenced.
Don't get influenced. Don't try and be clever. So if you've got to clear your lines, you clear your lines. Clear your lines, clear lines. So we learned that expression, clear the way you're facing.
Yeah.
So if it's coming, I've got to head it that way. That's where it's gone. If I've got to clear my lines, we'll go. Don't try and turn play back to the keeper. What's he going to do? What you just done. What you could have done.
Yeah.
10, 20, 30 yards further forward. So that was how it was, and he taught us a lot, Bill.
We've talked about that before, haven't we? When a keeper will give it to a defender, then the defender will dilly-dally on it, allow the forward to come, and then in a panic, give it back to the keeper. He could have kicked it himself with a bit of time and consideration, but now he's got to make it for us.
And then under pressure.
Yeah.
That game down here, Blues, Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Where we almost destroyed the young keeper.
Mm.
I fell for him. I fell for him that night. I just kept giving it back to him, kept giving it back to him. I really fell for him. But to his credit, he came out for the following game. He was terrific and then he kicked on again.
Yeah.
But that little thing like that can make all the difference. But
yeah, it's one thing, isn't it? That's the thing. Defenders and keeper. The keeper, there is no margin for error. Isn't there? There's no allowance. And like you say, that happens once. In Peterborough as well, when Bailey Peacock Farrelly ended up in the net with it where he couldn't get it out of his feet quick enough.
Especially the back pass rule now. It was obviously a little bit different back in the day when the keeper could pick it up, but now
it's... Yeah.
Well, to be fair, when I was watching the highlights of the Blues Villa game before you came in, and even back then, it was the back pass to Tony Coton, wasn't it? And even then when you could pick it up, but because it was wet, he's still got the touch on it and scored, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So even then, he just turning and giving it to the keeper. It's...
Oh, it was Pat Van, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
How did the Blues think about then? Was you in the Villa team at the time?
No, I played 4 games for Villa for the first team. But prior to that, I've gone along to Shrewsbury. I got to play against George Riley and all that.
Yeah.
So I knew I was ready. And obviously Gafford left and he came across. But I knew I was going to I knew you wanted me, put it that way. Because Bill told me, obviously no mobile phone back. So we used to go to Villa Park during the summer and whatnot, just nip into the office or whatever. We just part parcel what he did and whatever. And then he left a message for me to ring him, Bill. So I rang Bill and he said, this is the night before the European Cup final, I rang him against Fred Bayern. I was in Olive Rock and I walked my wife and my daughter, we walked through the phone box, we didn't have any phone nails. Walked to the phone box and rang him and he said, Gaffer wants to sign you. Right. So we go back to pre-season at Villa, knowing that he wanted to sign me. But then we played the first Central League game of the season, the Wednesday night at Molyneux. And I tweaked in my ankle. So I was injured. And then I think it was in September. I think it was September the 5th. I signed. Something like that. Or it was my first game, but I signed on the Thursday. Tony Barton, bless me, told me the guy for one sometime holding you anyway. He said, I'm not, because that's what, if people were honest with people and tell the truth. So, what do you want to do? I said, I'm going to go. I want to go. Did I have to move on? No, it's come to play for Manzo and play for one year, and also the club.
Why did he send you out on loan if you fancied you there?
No, it wasn't someone who sent me along.
Oh, sorry.
It was Tony Barton. Gaffer was already gone.
So you got the games and the run, and then
I played the first team on the run.
Yeah. He come in, send you out on loan, and Ron was like, I'll have him. Yeah.
Yeah. I went to my games for Villa. I was at Tottenham Hall was my debut. Who won 1-0 with Sid Cohen scoring some ability. With Idealism Villa and all them people, I don't know, played the Tottenham. We then went to Coventry on a Tuesday night, Wednesday night, I think it was. I think we drew one each. We drew 1-1, something like that. And then we went to Anfield on the Saturday. So it was Saturday, Tuesday or Wednesday. It would have been Wednesday. Yeah. The old days were Wednesday. And then we went to Anfield on the Saturday. Now, Liverpool go for the title. And they had to win. Because they were up against United. We need both needed to win. To win the league. Liverpool were in the ascendancy. We scored first. Villa scored first when they won it up. I can't remember if Dave Geddes scored or Ivor scored. But we went 1-0 up anyway. And then Liverpool, we got beat 4-1. David Johnson scored a couple. And then the lad called, he's really lad, he passed away a few years ago. Ivy Coyne, left back, he scored as well. They played. We lost, and then I actually scored in own goal came off me, and they crossed the ball from the right to the back post, and then a lad called Ray Kennedy, is a big number, the tall 6'3", 6'2". He's a best striker for Arsenal when they were double in the '70s. Ray, when he was playing, they converted to a left side midfield player, terrific player, played for England in the World Cup and everything. And he's coming in the back post, and I know what's going on. I've tried to get to the back post, and he's ending it, and he's come off me, and he's gone in, and that sort of thing. The game was a match today and stuff like that. And we lost 4-1 at Anfield. And I didn't play the following year when they won the league. I would have been the 15th player. They used 14 players, and I would have been the 15th player. Played Ipswich at home. Neck and neck, a bit like the Arsenal match of this season. And Big Ebo was injured, Alan Evans was injured. Then he declared fit. I got called up last minute, going to the game or what have you. I actually watched the game from the dugout. But we lost the game. Villa got beat. Coming to a 1-0, 2-1 coming later. Score. But we lost the game. So I didn't play that season. So obviously they had to go to Ibury. Lost 2-0 at Ibury. But Middlesbrough beat Ipswich 3-2, or the 2-0, I think it was 2-0, being 2-0. And I was 3-0 because the guy scored a hat-trick. One of the few Scandinavians in the team in the country at the time, the Yugoslav striker, he scored a hat-trick. But anyway, Villa won the league. Because if she got beat at the same time, and so he was there. And then obviously, finally, he'd won the European Cup. I was never involved with the European Cup squad. I trained with the squad, but I never got travelled with the squad after I did the games. And after Gaffer left quarterfinals for the quarters, when he fell out with Doug Ellis and whatever.
Yeah.
Fell out, and he was over here before the end of the season. And then in September, I didn't sign. Well, to lie, the European Cup year, I played one game of my last game for Villa. I played away at Goodison Everton, we drew 0-0. One of the few games that was on that day, because of the frost, and the country was frosted, wondered about what they had on the side of the team. One of the very few games, normally on then. And at the time, I didn't know it, but I spoke to Big, 1992, I spoke to Rod Atkinson at Wembley. Stoke was in the Autoglass final, and I didn't play. And I saw him after the game, and he said, I wanted to sign you. So you, the game, you said, I came to watch it to Goodison, and I, while you played, I said, I want to sign you United. I said, what? I said, yeah, I want to sign you that way. He said, he would let you come.
There you go.
But he didn't let me go. Well, I'd never forgotten it, he told me. And it was just a, I'd come across Ron Atkins.
Oh, it's a tropic conversation.
I'd come across him a number of times. And the first time I came across Ron Atkins, believe it or not, was personally, you've heard about the game, Len Cantello testimony, the Blacks v. White at West Brom? You've heard about that?
Yeah.
You heard about that, yeah?
Mm.
Well, I was one of the subs. And when he was, they invited team, the Midlands teams, the Wolves, Cov, and the Hereford and all that, to send out a black player to this game. And I was just not long I've been at the lot. So I've gone wearing my West Midlands school badge, my blazer, because I played for the county. And that's what, you know, because them days you had to collar and tie and whatnot. So that's what I had. That was, you know, not like now. People got 10 billion jackets and suits. Mm-hmm. So that was my pride and joy. So I got the bus up to, I think it was 74th, he was up to the Hawthorns. And I walked into the, wherever, and I'm petrified. I am crapping myself. They're all there. Rob Owen, Cyril, and all. And I walked into the change rooms, and Ron asked me to win. All right, yeah. Who are you with? And I went, I'm with the Woolwich. At the time, the advert about the Woolwich has been
a retro.
Yeah, and that's all I came to my head.
I'm the Woolwich.
I'm bricking it. I am absolutely bricking it. And it just broke the ice.
Brilliant.
Because I'm in a room with all these people watching TV and whatnot, and I'm bricking it. And it just sort of eased attention, and then it's every time I see him like that, he won't go to my back, you know. And I played the second half alongside Bob Hayes and George Berry, the two centre backs. And then I played, I came on for Bob Hayes in the second half, and I played so I was part of that Black v White game with Lincoln Taylor's testimonial.
Brilliant.
And obviously, I was part of that.
So when you went to Blues, the Villa, so you were obviously just tight and mates, and obviously you've had Tony and stuff. It was like, was the rivalry even bigger, or was you just kind of, was it just, because we've seen some of the, obviously the footage and stuff like that. It's,
I think what it was, as I look back, as I said to you before, the first time I was mentioned about anything about Blues, and there's a program, and there's a Forest, it's called the Villa Man, like an article in the back of the program, like a feature. And he was against, this is a Blue Villa program, it was against Forest. I was in Forest. And then I said, yeah, we'll talk about local, developing locally and whatnot. And I said, yeah, I'm a Blues fan. No, it's a Blues fan and whatnot. Some of the lads knew, like Shorey, bless him. Guys used to go to King's Earth, which isn't far from Shining, from where I was. And he used to take me, to give me a lift in. He used to meet at the Fig Fire Terminus in King's Earth. He'd give me a lift in the train, into the little white then one train and stuff like that. And he'd also played in the youth team the year before, the year on, above me, Gary, and stuff like that. So we were good mockers and whatnot. And on your office, we used to, when we was playing Central League games, you kick off early, 1 o'clock, sometimes 2 o'clock. And if we were at home, Blues were at home, as soon as the game was off, me and Oppy, we'd jump in and get the lift or jump in the bus to get here to watch the last 20 minutes or so. And that. So he was one of them, you know, sort of thing. Obviously, TC lived over at Polesworth, Tamworth Way, and whatnot. But as time evolved, when we went to Blues, I don't know what it was, where we're the pride of now playing for our club, that we became really connected and tight, because it's hard to describe where the, so there was no real rivalry with Villa. There was a rivalry between Oppy, bless him, who was the best man at my wedding, and I've known Robert since we were like 10, 11. We played together for the county. Sorry, we played together for the, played against him at school, 11, and we played against him, I was in the same team with him at South Birmingham. So I called Mickey Small, went to Luton Town as well. So we played with the same team. Got all the goal, like he was at Pitmaston. But then I moved across to Shardin. So then the next time I saw him, we were playing against for Pitmaston in the the Blues Cup final. And then obviously I found the Villa, and then we became way more good weeks ago, up a few chars as we did back then, and whatnot. But when we were at Villa, Oppie and Colin Gibson just never got on. Gibble the left back, Oppie the right, wide right, and they were kicking on the side of each other, training. And some days they full blown off for fisticuffs, you know. And then if you look at that game, they sort of got battle of Birmingham, whatever they call it.
Well, it had absolutely rattled it down as well, as into the pitch was sodden, wasn't it? Which obviously doesn't help with slower tackle distances. And
if you remember in that, he'd done Gailey, Gibbo had done Gailey. And there's a challenge I've gone through in somebody playing the ball, but ferociously. And then they've wiped the lines with that as well.
Yeah.
And if you look at the full game, that's what happened.
But you won the ball first.
Oh, I did, yeah. Oh, no, I did. I was one of these centre-backs. Although I played tough, but I only went the other way if they started.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was always brought up on with Bill, going back to Bill Shortest. You don't have to start a war. Because if you start a war, you're saying to them, you want a war. But let them start the war. And if they start it, you finish it. Because now they don't know when you're going to come.
Yeah.
So all those little nuggets I learned off Bill. They don't know when you're coming.
So I surprise you like slowly, so that ball becomes 50-50-ish, 60-40 to you. You know you're going to get the ball.
70-30 for me.
Yeah, you know you're getting the ball first. It's like,
linesman's cut all down, just everyone just in a pile behind.
That was the mentality. If you're going to hit him, make sure you hit him.
Mm.
And you take the ball, but everything's going.
But even that game, you see Hoppy, and Hoppy's like kind of...
No, it is. What's saying? That game, the challenges... The flying in, and then obviously you got McMahon on Broadhurst in the middle, haven't you?
Well, we looking back on it, we were aggrieved because I felt I scored a legitimate goal when they gave on ball.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, where the hell was the VAR? Because there was no out of this world. I still to this day don't know where that came from. And then obviously they were really good to concede and what have you. There's a few tackles going like we've already said. And then obviously Macca has gone over the top on Kev. And that's what finished Kev's career, you know, in truth. Because he needed to recover back from that and stuff. And if you look at the clip, you'll see the clip where I think Big Mick's going in to go, man, I've pushed Mick away or whatnot. But then he was, at the end of the game, obviously the penalty came and I took the penalty. I was told to someone about this that I did 2 weeks ago. To this day, I don't know why I changed my mind.
Oh, that was a mind change, was it?
Yeah, I changed my mind.
Where would you normally put him?
I would normally, I'd just hit him hard and they could go to, if I went there, would cross the keeper or the right in the middle.
You know, even if he gets that, he's all the bigger power anyway. Yeah.
So you've gone from that, what, last minute, then you're going
to
play?
So I tried to place it, and I tried to place it here. And it was Spinks's big, good side. And obviously, I played with Spinks here at Villa for a number of years with a good pal of mine. And, you know, just...
Great keeper as well, to be fair.
Top lad. And what have you. And then after, I remember him saying to me after, why didn't you change your mind? Yeah, and I don't know why I changed my mind. Whether it is because the only thing I can look back on, I think, in preparation, where I felt, looking back on it now, I felt there's a lot of conjecture going on around there with the official and one referee, and I just felt I should not have gone and picked the ball up, should have left the ball to the last minute. More so
I could think about it.
Yeah, more so I could prepare myself, because I didn't, which is something we did really well with the England sides. We never lost a shootout. We looked that way, we would do really well for prep. So it was that. And then, but at the end of the game, people always seem to think he'd made a said something racial to me. It was never anything racial. He just said, I won't tell you what he said, but he made a derogatory comment towards one of my parents. And I just felt it was on at the time. I didn't even think about what I just reacted. And I reacted as if we're being in town and someone had said something like that, you would do the same. And that was it. The ironic thing is, obviously after the game, it's documented that a certain local press media guy gave us their footage to the FA or sent to the FA. And I got all up in front of the FA and I got 1 month ban. And the 1 month ban I got, I had to miss the Liverpool away. And that, honestly, I never forgot it. It really ripped me into the final bad enough, but then missing the game, playing Liverpool away, ripped me into. And so, yeah, I was, you know, sort of annoyed with that, but guilty as charged.
Who were the characters in that dressing room? Because obviously we spoke to TC and Mick and obviously Hoppy. Who were the other guys? You just seemed like a team of absolute nails.
We were well connected. Pat Van, we speak a lot, Pat and I. He's scared of his own shadow. Jumpy Pat. He's just nervous. That's how he is. But it was difficult to say who was the characters because everywhere you turned, there was some sort of influencer in terms of personality. Billy Wright was a terrific character. Billy, you know. Little Ian, bless him, he was just full of joys. Little Les Phillips, Martin Cool, you know. We had a guy called Wayne Mumford who played right back, so he's at Man City, Mumphy.
Is that Kurt in there as well?
Kurt had gone. Kurt came to Villa when Oppie went to the Blues. Okay. That's part of the deal.
I was going
to
say, because he's a lad, isn't he?
Who? Kurt, he's a top lad. Yeah, top lad. Stanley. I used to call him Stanley Matthew. When I first joined Blues, he was like playing wide right.
Yeah.
I used to call him Stanley. Because he hated playing out there. You know, the central midfield playing, a terrific pass of the ball.
Obviously, when it comes to the thing as well, Mark Dennis.
Well, that's why I'm saying the characters. You had Mark, you had Lange. Two terrific
characters. He had the record, didn't he, for red cards and
Mark, just, yeah. Well, but like I said, back in there, you could tackle. People had to tackle. And, yeah. You know, the winger again. It was always against the winger against the fullback, fullback against the winger. Central midfield played against. Every department had their own battles, individual battles. And the art what we were brought up on, win your individual duels. So if I lost one header, and then going back to Ottawa Villa, if you lose one header, that's one header too many. So it hurt to lose the header, it hurt to lose the challenge, so that's the way we were brought up.
Well, do you find with the players there as well, though, everyone knew that you were a tough team. Do you find sometimes you feel a little bit the football is underappreciated?
Oh, we were a good side. We could play. We could play. I was probably the worst technical player in the group.
Yeah.
But we could play. And when you think of people like Dylan, Kirbishley, Langan, Dace, you know, Broads is a very good passer. Byron Stevenson is a really good player, a really good technical footballer, Byron. You know, I've been part of the league setup or whatever. He's my first partner when I came. Jimmy Hagan, Pat Van. If you look at it, excuse me, and look at the lads who, when they left here and what they went on to do elsewhere, I'll tell you. I always felt that side that we had in the end, we were two, maybe three really experienced pros to take us on to another level. You know? We didn't have it. We had no money anyway. The club had nothing. So we were...
When you talk about the players then obviously what happened was there was a farcical and then it left us bereft.
Hang on, before we talk about the farcical and then moving on though, we've got to go to happier times, Villa and Blues. So obviously you've got the missed penalty, but you've also got the delightful finish in the 3-0 morning.
Swaz.
Even before that, the delightful finishing for me was my first goal for the club. In the tilt. I like the tilt, didn't I? In the tilt, another local derby against the Baggies. We were 1-0 down, my first season. Cold, cold day. I always remember it. And then a lad called Peter Eastall played up front with Cyril Regis, bless him. And Cyril had clobbered me. And I'm not kidding you. My ear was like, he'd banned me. Oh, and he was singing. And that's probably the best thing that he ever did. And the worst thing he ever did. Because what it did, it woke me up. Because I was just watching Cyril, because Cyril, the hero for me, playing good match, I'll be watching, I'd go watch. What I used to do, if I'd go watch the Albion play, and I'd go watch the Villa play. Because we were just football daft.
Yeah.
You know, we'd go, I remember going to Villa when they beat Liverpool 5-1. I was on the Witten End, watching the game. Because that's what we did. We wanted to go and watch football. You know, jumping to number 6 or whatever and go and watch football. That's what we would, if Blues were other Blue Nose and all that bit of Blues, all over Bisbee. Well, football, just go and watch football. So, playing against the Albion, my first local derby, and coming in a nice green and really yellow shirts and whatever. And Eric, they started well. And Clive Thomas was the referee, Clive the Buck. He was real famous, Clive, and they made sure at it, and he said, no, and I'm just looking, because I'm ready for the war now. And the big man's giving me one, and my ear all was singing. And that was before there was a thing called, by a lady called Madame Rosinia, like the gypsy curse on that tilt nymph.
Yeah.
Where our boots were painted red of the soul, black boots and all that and whatnot. Eastwood scored, and I think I got the equaliser. Yeah, I got the equaliser and the far stick. This side of the Tilton, the far stick, scored, slided in. And then Dill got the penalty for us to win again 2-1. And then I remember going off, and we would saw Shane's had all of you. And he said something to me. He said, like, don't have any heroes. I've never forgotten that. Because honestly, I was like, him banning me in the log holes really woke me up. And I played really well after that. And it was one of the best things one of my best performances for Blues, I felt. So, yeah, that was a particularly... And funny thing that the day before, my mum had said, when's the best time you scored a goal of it? Yeah, that sort of thing. So, yeah. Then obviously the Boxing Day game, I mean, it was sellout. I think they remember Trapattoni, the Juventus manager, came to watch the game, and he was talking about it after the media, read it in the media, you know, because he'd seen myself and Brendan Ormsby playing for Villa the year before we played together. And he said how well we played, boom, boom, boom. But then they had him in the cup, they got him in another competition. We need a UEFA Cup, would have been the champ, yeah, for the European Cup,
yeah.
Going again. And then when we won that game, and they were surprised that, you know, we had fought the bottom of the league at the time, midway through, turning them over, and he spoke about it, and mentioned us. You know, but I played well in the game itself, because obviously I knew Peter really well. Obviously I played against all the lads I knew, and Shorey and what have you. And Shorey, bless him, remember one thing he said to me, one last conversation we had before he passed, we were talking on the phone, and he said, like, he said, he'd played against Gentili. But he had more joy than Gentili than I had against me. You know, and I mean, this is just chuckle, like, you know, and another one of the path that I really miss, yes. But yeah, the goal corner coming, and I normally go in. Normally go to the back post. But when I was breathing my backside or when I was late, you know, upon I just sort of hung, and Big Mick and that, and we had Big Mick, they had Mick. Ferguson was willing to make half and that, and they were competing with Evans and McNaught and what have you, and I just held out for them. They just dropped, or like you said, I'm just side footed it. As I said before, because I'd been I played up front, people used to think I was a glove, just a big lump and whatever, but I knew I had some ability, and I just slotted it, and it dropped and started, went into the far corner. Again, the same side as the tilt end, that right hand side. What's to do your favorite?
Yeah, on the footage, you got the camera angle right behind you, haven't you, as well? Just watch you go.
Yeah, and that sort of thing. So, yeah, and then obviously the pelt has started to come in. Like, pelt has been obviously a player in Scotland, so I know the expression, things are coming slinging at me, the Villa reject, and the coins are coming at me and whatnot. And I just grew into the game. And then I think it was here. Look, Ian scored the other side, made it 2-0. And then Big Mick Ferguson made it 3-0. I can't remember which way around. But we played well. And I think the only game we lost to him in my time was the one of the battle. Because we beat him again. And then we beat him in the Machine Cup, obviously, the pre-season game. Or we beat him down here with Gailey and Harry scored. And that sort of thing. So yeah, we had some good times against them, results wise. But there were games that were always competitive. A local derby should be. Local derby should be competitive. You know, people talk about bragging rights and all that, but we weren't about bragging rights. It was just a case of you don't want to lose. That was the mentality.
I find that now in modern football, where you see derbies and there doesn't seem to be any passion and intensity in it.
We don't know what it means. That's the problem.
And there's not a lot of locals in it either, is there?
There is the thing. I remember after the games, we would go in. We had a club in town on Bristol Road called Cods, Castle Ball Boys. We'd go there for a beer.
Where that presentation in Edinburgh, yeah, used to go from there back in the days for the away games.
Yeah, those coaches. Yeah, so that's where we would go. And then we'd go from there to Boogies or Edwards and whatever. The Villa lads went different ways and whatever, but we'd meet up sometimes. You know, we'd have a laugh and joke about the games, the results and whatever, their performances and whatever. Because I knew the lads from playing with them and what have you. But it was just a case of, like, we knew it made our fans happy. You know what I mean? They were happy. They were happy with that. But also, this is the same time we had to go through spells where we were all in the relegation battle, you know, and we had to win in, I think, some like five of the last six games to stay up. And they played at Southampton away, you would Peter Shilton and Chris Nicol and all those team around and that, you know, around the Coventry and what have you. We could make it because we had that strong connection and togetherness. You know, and we sort of fought together, we had a beer together, or played together, but we all had each other's backs. You know, and that was the thing for us. I remember we played that Ian, and we lost 2-1 to Coventry, and Biff Sands, one big Nick. He had to have his pallet replaced and stuff like that. We scored early against Coff. We lost 2-1 and what have you. But no, it was just the way we were, the club, the team. We were really together. Geoffrey used to say, he'd hammer us on a Tuesday if there's no midweek game. He'd really run us. And we were fit. And he'd pummel us. And he'd say, right, now bugger off. Because he knew he had to go off for a beer. And then we train over I-80 nights on a Thursday on the old concrete as it was in AstroTurf in preparation to passenger also for another Thursday. We'd have come off Cross here and lunch at a D club and whatnot together. So we were all together. The lads, we used to go into town, a place called Geo's in the Bullring for a pasta before clubs started to, some clubs started to do pasta for lunch and that's about. That's what we do. Good going on. We all go together.
Team spirit.
Yeah, about six of us, five as much as they go.
Yeah, well, you see teams now, don't you? And they've all got the headphones on. They don't know what to throw each other a
No. We're gonna have to do a part two, mate. Yeah. We're gonna have to do a part two because we have hardly scratched the surface. But we're just mindful of your time. But
no worries.
Is there a message that you'd like to give to Blues fans?
Blues fans, I just hope what's going on, I don't know what's going on, the thing behind Craig leaving. I just hope it's not a downward spiral.
Yeah.
And we just keep the spirits up and keep going again, as we say, keep right on. Because it's a big season for us. And last season needed to consolidate. Hopefully this year we can make a big fist of it of getting in playoffs this year, because all the clubs, a lot of good clubs in the division, they're always spending money because they have to, you know, to be a tough division. So I just like to see us be a better version of ourselves than we were last season. Because I thought from the game I saw last season, I just thought we just lacked a little bit of blues. We lacked a little bit of blues last year. We waited for the opposition rather than getting after them, especially here, getting after them. And when we did get after people, they couldn't live with us. So I'd like to see us that. I come here, my grandson is a vet, I'm a granddaughter. The port where we're living in Newcastle, Staffordshire, is near Stoke, and they're my grandson's a Port Vale supporter. I'm bringing him down here, and then I have to go back up the M6. We're giving me pelters.
At least they had a good
time. I'm about losing to about getting beat by Port Vale. Wasn't a good.
Don't do that again.
I'm so pleased what's going on with the club. I really am. Really am pleased what's going on. But like I said, this hopefully this what's going on with Craig leaving and what have you. Don't put us on the back foot, the scheme out. Keep us sort of the good will going. Because it's a good club. A really big club as well, you know, your Blues fans as well. So it's a case of us get back to the Premier League. We need to be in the Premier League. And that's all I say. So but yeah.
Thanks, mate.
No worries.
It's been a pleasure.
Cheers. Good stuff.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Tom. All right.